time to wake up, Lower Alabama. From the original home of Mardi Gras, moon pies, and more, this is L.A. Catholic Morning.
Going home to Alabama, all the way to where the ocean meets the road.
Good morning, Lower Alabama. How's everyone doing this morning? Mr.
We're
Todd
doing great.
Sylvester. Oh, there. Thank you, Mike Romano, producer. And Todd Sylvester, yes, on this Wednesday morning. Todd, tell me if I'm right today. Today is St. Catherine of Siena.
It is.
Okay.
Big day for the Dominicans.
Yeah, right saint, right day. This is the original bad girl. This is the tough chick. Yeah, this is the one that said,
Definitely.
Hey, Mr. Pope, get your sorry self back to Rome. You know, and I love this woman. I've actually been visited her grave.
Love her quote, too.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
If you were who you were meant to be, you would set the world on fire.
Wow, what a battle cry. Man, oh man. And we have up next Father Tad Poholchik with Rationing Ventilators on LA Catholic Morning, Archangel Radio, 1410 AM and 94.5 FM.
If home is where the heart is, then my heart lives by the bay. If home is where the heart is, then my heart lives by the bay.
Welcome back to LA Catholic Morning here on Archangel Radio. I'm Todd Sylvester here with Michelle McAloon. Greats at the Command Center, producing like a boss.
Mm-hmm.
We have this on the line. We're all about to get smarter. Father Tad Poholchik, who's the Director of Education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center in Philadelphia, here to speak to us about his latest article that we all read in the Catholic Week, Making Sense Out of Bioethics, If Rationing of Ventilators is Necessary. Good morning, Father Tad.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Listen, delighted to be with you as always. These are such turbulent times. Good to have a chance to talk through some of these things that are on the news with such frequency.
If there's anything else that's on the news, I mean, there's nothing else on the news. COVID-19.
Wouldn't it be nice to have just a good old-fashioned alligator story in the morning?
It really would be.
Yeah,
I'd love a Florida man story.
I'm actually missing that.
A Florida
right
man
now.
Story. Yeah.
They say it's not the main story, it's the story.
It's sucking oxygen out of the room. That's right.
And your article did point out something that I hadn't thought about, because not living in a hot spot in New York City or some other place, I didn't think about, wow, what if they do have too many patients and not enough ventilators?
Right. This is something that's been kind of on people's radar for a while, in the sense that the possibility of a pandemic has been discussed, certainly by various government agencies, by large hospital systems. And so this has come up. It's been something that, in fact, years ago, certain states and other regulatory bodies drafted protocols in case the ventilators were to get in short supply. And the kinds of questions they were saying to themselves were like, if there aren't enough ventilators to go around, what do you do? If you have new people coming in who need ventilators, and you've got other people who are already on all the ventilators that we have, is it okay to basically pull off some of those ventilators from some people who maybe are not doing quite so well and give them to new arrivals with the disease? So that's the scenario that has really been, I would say, an intellectual discussion for the most part. It hasn't been the kind of thing that we've ever had to confront in reality. And so with the arrival of this pandemic, everyone was like, oh, this may be the first time we're actually tested about triage or rationing situations.
Well, if you talk to Governor Cuomo, it just seems like we need a million more ventilators. And see, I don't even understand some of the rhetoric that's going on, Father, and then some of the reality, some of the numbers, they don't seem to match up. Like when the Navy brought that 1,000-bed ship into New York Harbor, and then in the weeks that it was there, it treated 180-something patients.
And we haven't heard about ventilators in 2 weeks. I mean,
everyone was making them. Tesla was making them. I mean, like, what the?
Right. It was a very faddish kind of thing for a brief period there. There also, if you were scouring a little bit of the scientific literature, there was a whole new discussion that popped up, which said, look, even if you stick a lot of people onto ventilators, is that in fact the right way to treat them when they have COVID-19? And a number of people who work in ICUs were saying, we're not sure this is even the recommended approach. This is a strange disease, you know, and they were saying we should use things like CPAP machines like you use for sleeping, sleep apnea, and maybe even things like nasal cannula where you deliver oxygen into the nose. They were saying this may end up working more effectively than, because when you put somebody on a ventilator, remember what you have to do. You have to sedate them. And it's heavy duty, long term, often sedation where you shut them down, put a tube down their throat, and then force this oxygen into their lungs. So this has a lot of potential negative consequences as somebody is kind of comatose while they're on the ventilator. So all these discussions have percolated to the surface and reminded us that just ramping up manufacture of ventilators as if this is going to be a quick fix, that's not so simple. There's much more involved here.
And Father Tad, that's not the real heart of this discussion, is it? I think you go back to a term, triage. And what does triage mean? It means providing a medical care to those most in need and ranking that system, ranking a system of triage of who gets medical care first. I mean, this is a practice throughout the world in emergency rooms throughout the world where you have limited resources, limited doctors. We're never going to be 100% fully prepared for every tragedy that comes down the road, every disaster. I mean, this Chicken Little, the sky is falling, has been, it's been very, very shrill.
Well, the question of triage too involves the question of, it's kind of a fearful scenario that, oh, look, if I'm in the hospital and they have already hooked me up to a ventilator and the ventilator is providing some benefit for me, are they all of a sudden going to come in and take away my ventilator because maybe somebody younger than me just walked through the emergency room door? That's the kind of fear that a lot of people have and consider as a scenario. Is this what triage means, that I could lose my ventilator? And so I think there needs to be some discussion around what triage means and how does one proceed in some of these situations. There is a fundamental concern, ethically speaking, about removing a ventilator from somebody against their consent. I think ethicists everywhere acknowledge that this is a legitimate concern, and we should exhaust all the other approaches here in terms of getting consent. Now, you have to do some assessment of who needs the ventilator the most, and there are a number of what they call scoring systems, where you figure out this patient is worse off than that patient. It's clear that this patient would benefit more than that other one if they could get a ventilator. And once you've done that kind of scoring, then what makes sense is to ask the patient themselves if they're conscious, or more likely their proxy, their designated healthcare surrogate, and say to them, would you be willing to give up this ventilator? Look, your loved one is very close to death. We don't believe that the ventilator is anything except heroic and extraordinary here. And if that's the case, the family may say, yes, just let's make sure last sacraments and other things have been taken care of. But they may say yes, in which case, then that ventilator can be taken away and given to the new arrival. And that's a process that respects everybody's dignity here and doesn't involve discrimination where we say, oh, here we've got an elderly person. Because they're elderly, we're going to look at quality of life or remaining years of life where we're trying to make assessments and say certain people are worth more than certain others. That's always an ethical, an unethical temptation that we can face. It's an ethical minefield once we start doing that. And I think good triage protocols do try to avoid that and say, no, no, we're going to do this based on legitimate medical prospects as best we can assess them for different patients and do our best to safeguard informed consent by everybody involved.
Father Ted, don't we do that on a regular basis, though? The ventilators is an intellectual exercise, but when it comes to things like organ donor and organ recipient, don't we sort of do that now? Who has, you know, who has the most need by age and everything else of how someone gets a donor? This ventilator, this intellectual exercise in ventilator, it's good, but I think it was one driven by fear when we actually have triage protocols and practices that are practiced every day in place. If you even go into an emergency room, that the one that is bleeding and hurt the most gets the first care.
Well, to a degree, that's true. But we haven't really had a situation where there has been a need to reallocate resources that have run out. This is something I think it does have a novel element. And when you say there are triage protocols out there, well, yes and no, in the sense that some of those triage protocols that were being dusted off for this pandemic, they had some problematic sections in there. They were recommending that maybe the elderly be denied treatment for the benefit of younger candidates. They were doing other sorts of questionable ethical assessments. So I think what constitutes a good triage protocol actually was not fully worked out, because those situations of genuine running out of resources have been comparatively rare. There, as you mentioned, wartime is one situation where they sometimes come up, but we haven't been in those scenarios in a long time, and the medical profession has been facing a number of temptations in terms of respecting human dignity all the time. We know that from the euthanasia debates, from abortion, et cetera, that the medical field is charting a new direction, and that's a concern. So triage protocols need to be discussed again, and I'm glad that we've had the opportunity in the wake of this pandemic to do it. I don't think all of the protocols that are out there are necessarily good or well formulated, regrettably.
Right.
I think we need people, though, like you, who are trained not only in ethics, but in reason and understanding, because you've got the two extremes, Father, and it just seems like people find themselves in those two extremes. The ones where you're right, they believe in the death with dignity and all that kind of stuff, which is just horrible. But then you've got the other side. I remember I was dragged into a whole family argument over some of the people wanted their grandmother, who was in a coma, to have a pacemaker put in. And they're like, Todd, you need to talk to, you know, my brother and da da da. And I went, well, she's 92 years old and she's in a coma. Like, I don't know if this is really the best thing at this point in time in her life. They're just struggling for, even if it's going to add 2 months to their lives. You know what I'm saying, Father?
Yeah, those assessments have to be made carefully. That's the bottom line, and sometimes dispassionately. And you can have situations where families will be clinging by their fingernails to what represents very, very questionable treatments and interventions. The pacemaker one is a little nuanced. I think the question of how much burden there is in terms of putting in a pacemaker. These days, some doctors can put them in practically in their sleep. It's so minor a procedure. It's amazing how things in the past that would have taken significant surgical interventions and a lot of instrumentation are getting more and more rapidly simplified so that they're just easier to do. And in the hands of a skilled professional, they go very smoothly. But you're right that there's always a need to make some careful assessments in end-of-life situations. And that's true for the COVID-19 scenarios that play out as well. And I think that has been a challenge. And when I say that there will be situations that you need to ask the family for permission, you will have some families that will not be reasonable. And they will be clinging to extremely remote prospects, or clinging to a hope for a miracle kind of thing, when really all the medical data is pretty convincing that your loved one has just a few more hours or a day or two, no matter what. And we need to work with families like that to the best of our ability to let them act in a decision-making capacity that is reasonable.
There was kind of an unrealness and unreality, Todd, about all of this. Is medical resources are a limited resource. They just are. Not everybody is going to get, you know, I mean, it's just a limited resource. We can work to eliminate and to flatten that or to expand that resource so more people get more resources. But there was kind of an unreal conversation, I think, going on about, you know, wait a minute, every single individual demands a full scale resources, but our economy and the way we are set up is not towards that. It has to go to what you're talking about, Father Tad, about, you know, based on ethical decision making. And a lot goes into that about, you know, the value of life and blah, blah, blah. I mean, not blah, 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 but there's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think this whole coronavirus situation really has raised a couple of bigger picture type questions. And so at the beginning, you can say, well, what is our initial goal? The goal to flatten the curve. You say, why are we doing this? What's the goal? It's to safeguard a segment of our economy. Which segment? The segment that provides health care, because we all agree we don't want them to be massively overwhelmed. Mm. Now, you can say that's a reasonable goal. We don't want to have body bags piling up in our hospital wards. So we can say, all right, let's take some steps to flatten the curve. And we did that. And I think it turned out that the virus was a little bit less virulent than some of the initial predictions. So the curve ended up being flat. We didn't have this massive overwhelming of the hospital system. But you have to remember that as you take a step like that, there is a cost that will be paid by lockdowns and so on. So you have to be trading on those two and saying, is our healthcare system so sacrosanct that we can destroy the rest of the economy in order to do that or not? And I think the answer there has to be based on a judgment of prudence, where we say, no, we're not going to destroy the whole economy for the benefit of the healthcare system, but we're going to play between these two. And
wow.
Yeah, just incredible. Well, Father Poholchak, you're always, you know what, always great food for thought. We always really, really appreciate you giving us our wisdom for the week.
Can we give you a direct line with President Trump?
Yeah, there we go. We need to, yeah, actually, that whole thing about leadership. Yeah, there we go.
Thanks so much for listening to LA Catholic Morning here on Archangel Radio, WNGL, 1410 AM and 94.5 FM. God bless y'all.
Don't forget to call your mama. She loves you. And go Chiefs.